Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you were invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Mindfulness. Let's talk about mindfulness. It's not a magical panacea, but when understood and applied properly, it offers the benefits of greater wholeness, connection to others, and balance for dealings with life's ups and downs. And boy, do we need that these days of coronavirus. Our guest today is Donald Altman, author of the new book, Simply Mindful, a 7-week course and personal handbook for mindful living. Donald is a psychotherapist, an award-winning author, and a former Buddhist monk. Featured in the Mindfulness movie and profiled in the Living Spiritual Teachers Project, he has written over 15 books that teach how to incorporate mindfulness into daily life. Award-winning books include The Mindfulness Toolbox, winner of 2 gold IBPA Benjamin Franklin Awards as the best book in the psychology and body-mind-spirit categories. Then there's Clearing Emotional Clutter, named one of the best spiritual books of 2016, and The Mindfulness Code, called one of the best spiritual books of 2010. Donald has served the community for many years as past vice president of the Center for Mindful Eating, and having been an adjunct professor in the Interpersonal Neurobiology program at Portland State University. As a national speaker for the Professional Education Systems Institute, Donald has trained thousands of mental health professionals on changing the brain through mindfulness practices. And I might add, he's also been a frequent guest host for me here on Pathways. Hello, Donald, and welcome to the Pathways program.
Hey, Paul, great to be here.
We've got you back on the other side of the mic to talk about one of your many books. You're so productive. 15 mindfulness books. Wow. What's different about this one called Simply Mindful?
Well, this is I have great passion for mindfulness and what it can offer people. And what I wanted to do here was create a real book that gave people a journey through mindfulness, not just through the experience of mindfulness, but also that helped them get a historical background, understand how mindfulness developed, where it came from, how it came to the West, what happened here with mindfulness, how it's being used in modern health, and also including the research on mindfulness. So I wanted to create a kind of more structured journey to mindfulness so that somebody gets a very complete understanding, both through experience. And of course, you can't just talk about mindfulness. You need to personally experience it. And those experiences go throughout the book, but also to give people a kind of a background so that they understand mindfulness in the context, right, of both where it came from and where it is.
Yeah, you say the book is not a how to learn meditation or mindfulness book. How would you describe the structure of your new book?
Yeah, well, you know, you will learn meditation in this book, but it's more than just that. And I think what it is a way to steep yourself in a practice and personally experience it. And then I'm really into adaptation. I want to help guide people into using it in a way that it can help them best. So it's not a paint-by-numbers book. I think maybe that's what I mean by that. It's not a paint-by-numbers book, but it's a steep yourself in the experience book and then see how you can adapt it. I'm always trying to take mindfulness out of the box. What I think about mindfulness is that it's not, you don't learn it in a linear way, even though I try to create a, you know, kind of a structured approach here. But the truth is that it's not linear. Different things will happen in your life that will suddenly be like a light bulb goes off. And I mean, this has happened to me recently. I mean, I've been working with mindfulness for many, many years and teaching it around the world. And yet suddenly something happened to me recently. And I suddenly, this idea that people make you get upset. All of a sudden I had this realization, no, they don't. I make myself upset. And that's a mindfulness idea, but it suddenly struck home in a new way for me. And made sense for me in a new way. So this is not a linear journey, and that's what I love about it. Really, it's something that you embrace and you start to understand more about as you go through your life. We get seasoned in so many different ways in life. And, you look at the coronavirus, right? And look how it's forcing so many of us to do things differently, to come out of our comfort zones. And I see it really as maybe a silver lining for a way to spend more time reflecting, looking in, maybe connecting with others also. And there's a silver lining in everything. In fact, I talk a lot about gratitude in Simply Mindful as a selective attention practice, because mindfulness really at its core is about how do we use our awareness? How do we use this incredible, precious gift that we have that can help us see even the precious, ordinary moment as something that is fabulous and wonderful, right? Things that we just take for granted.
Now, you mentioned how you continue to learn more about deeper layers and levels of mindfulness and how it helped you see how you were, your emotional reactions were coming out of you rather than blaming that on something external to yourself. How can we take that same concept and apply it to all of the fear of the unknown that's present in our lives today at the beginning of this coronavirus pandemic?
Well, that is so true. Fear is probably one of the greatest things we have to face and confront right now. And one of the ways we can start to do that is to look within and watch our own mind. Watch how does it get fearful? What is it reacting to? What's it igniting to? You know, even the idea of this coronavirus is almost like throwing a spark into your mind, right? And what's igniting in there? What are some of the beliefs, some of the worries we have that are igniting our own mind? And if we can start to understand that, we can put out that fire, right, before it even starts. And so I think one of the great gifts that mindfulness gives us is the ability to look within and to observe, to notice what things are causing us to want to react, right? And sometimes these are conditioned, habitual ways of reacting and thinking. You know, the average person has around over 20,000 thoughts in the course of a day. It's interesting, the Buddha thought we had even many, many more, what he called mind or thought moments, right, every second. But if you thought about yourself having all of these thoughts, really, how many of those thoughts tell you something really profound about who you are or your situation or about life? How many are just conditioned, habitual, or toxic thoughts? And so we can start to step back and almost become like a gatekeeper and start to look at these as they come into our awareness and notice that they rise, they fall, they go away. They're not permanent. It's one of the other great teachings of mindfulness is that we don't need to hold on and grab onto things because everything is flowing, isn't it?
Okay, well, let's stay on this topic of fear. And I'm curious, how does mindfulness of fear help people manage fear? I mean, we've got these fears, and it's the fear of the unknown, but it's also the fear of death and the fear of sickness. And these are pretty natural, innate fears for human beings to have. So we become mindfulness of the fact that we're feeling afraid. How does that help?
Well, one way that it can help, that's a great question, because what mindfulness does is it helps us also see our connection to all people, helps us realize the nature and the core of suffering, right? That we all are suffering, that fear of this coronavirus is another form of suffering. And you're suffering from it. I'm suffering from it. Just look at the news, right? Everybody is suffering from it. And so instead of just sheltering in place, we could love in place. We could cherish one another in place. We could have compassion for the suffering that we all are experiencing from this coronavirus, right? So that we could have loving kindness in place, right? So there are alternatives, and each of those overcomes fear.
Okay, so you're saying like there's a fourth alternative to the problem of fear. I mean, we have fight, flight, freeze, and what would your mindfulness one be?
And then we have love. love and loving kindness, which actually, when you think about it, when you're in a loving place, it's very incompatible with a feeling of fear, isn't it? It's almost like they can't exist together, right? And so by developing that idea of loving kindness, and I have the loving kindness meditation actually is in the Simply Mindful book. When we learn how to develop that, we automatically just it kind of it puts out the fire of fear. It's like water, it just puts out that fire, and it's a nourishing water, right? It's a nurturing water, and it helps us have a sense of compassion, not only for others, but also for ourselves in this difficult situation that we're in. I think that's how mindfulness can really help us to overcome fear.
Yeah,
And
well,
thank you.
that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, if you think about, you've got fight, flight, freeze, and you could, I suppose, say surrender. Surrender or accept that these are kind of foundation stones for l the love that you're talking about.
You could say that surrender is and accept. I
But
mean, those two go together.
not surrender in a panicky way, but surrender in a acceptance way, you know, sort of like I accept the fact that there are things in life I can't control. There are some things in life I can't even understand. And I'm not going, and I'm just going to accept that fact and not, and relieve myself of the burden of having to fix it.
Yeah, and relieving yourself of the burden, that's that surrender. Surrender is not submission. And the difference with submission, of course, is that you have no choice. But surrender is to willingly allow yourself to release, right, or let go of something and make space for something else to happen, to come in. And so, we could surrender, we could accept that our condition, and then we can move into loving kindness and sending out, generating these feelings of warm wishes for the well-being of all of us.
So, from a mindfulness perspective, what else can we learn from the coronavirus?
Well, I think we can also learn that maybe it's an opportunity to cherish what we have in our life, to maybe to cultivate what I like to think of as paradoxical gratitude. So you've got four different kinds of gratitude that I talk about in Simply Mindful. One is basic necessities that we can be grateful for, without which life would be true suffering: water, shelter, clothing, warmth, so forth. There's our personal gratitude for having our health, having a job, having transportation, and even some of those are being affected, right, through this coronavirus. Then there's our relationships that are so important that enrich our lives. And the last one, paradoxical gratitude. So I think coronavirus would fall in the paradoxical category, which is wishing for the things you wish you didn't have in your life, right? So we could wish for the opportunity to maybe connect with people we haven't talked to in a long time. Now that we're stepping back, we're pausing from our daily activities. Just the other day, I had the occasion of I hadn't I came across somebody in my phone book. This was somebody who I had worked with like 40 years ago, and I gave him a call. I didn't even know where he lives, if he's still around or what. And last night, he gave me a return call back, and it was so wonderful to reconnect with somebody from my own past and to hear that, he's gone through a lot of trials in his life, but he feels very blessed. And it was just really nice to connect and to think about maybe this coronavirus is giving us an opportunity to step back. And that's the paradoxical gratitude part of it, to step back and maybe think about who could I connect with right now? Who could use my connection, use my caring, right? And maybe we've just been on a treadmill, and this is a reminder that we can pause, that sometimes we need to get off that treadmill.
Wow. You talk about transitions in the book and how we need to manage them. Why is that, and how does that relate to our discussion?
Well, it's interesting. If I'm going to talk about transitions, I really first have to talk a little about brain science. Because when we're in transition, when you're moving from one place to another, we're all transitioning right now because of the coronavirus, right? We're not able to have our normal pattern of things. But whenever you're in transition, the more emotional part of the brain, the more primitive part of the brain, the amygdala, that what you were calling the fear, flight, freeze part of the brain. That's the part of the brain that actually sends those signals out to us. It's much quicker than the thinking brain. So when we're in transition, that part of the brain actually gets triggered. And so we need to have some practices, actually, and mindfulness is able to do that to help us get more grounded, get more present, right? And so that's one of the ways I think that we need to manage transitions, just to be aware of how many we're making each day can help us.
You know, I like the way that you compare it to Teflon, which is
Okay.
the ability to be more open, curious, accepting, grateful, and compassionate.
Well, mindfulness is give us ability to be more like Teflon, and so we can let things slide off more easily. You know, it's like they remember there's the image of the lotus flower. Some of you may have
Of course,
listeners
yeah.
may have recognized that image of what a lotus flower looks like. And the lotus flower is very important in a lot of traditions and in cultures. It's a symbol of the awakening of consciousness, and that's because the lotus comes up from muddy water, but when it gets to the top of the surface, it's totally clean. Nothing sticks to it, right? All that mud, all the yuck, I mean, it cleans off. That's because a lotus is super hydrophobic. And what that means is kind of like Teflon, right? It's a property where nothing sticks. And so that's the same quality of mind that we want to try and develop, to cultivate this Teflon lotus flower super hydrophobic ability to clean all the yuck off, to have that sense of awakened purity, of greater clarity and stillness of mind. So it's a beautiful thing to know that we can cultivate that. And also, even just, you know, when you're aware of the stickiness, that too is an awakened state. That is a moment of unstickiness when you notice the stickiness of your mind.
You like to refer to mindfulness as an inside job. What do you mean
Well,
by that?
it's really is an inside job because you're using this bare awareness. You're using what I call an inner sight awareness. You've got your regular awareness that when things contact, you're aware of them. Your eyes contact something, and so, oh, that's I'm seeing this object. I'm seeing this color. Then I have all these mental conceptions around that. Oh, I like that color. I dislike it. It's kind of neutral to it. And then there's an awareness that just looks at awareness. And that's your inner sight awareness. It's like a flashlight that's shining on everything your mind is doing. And so you can watch everything from this clear place. It's like an illuminating light and it watches everything. So again, it's that non-sticky awareness. I also call it gravity-free awareness. You know, often, how often is your mind orbit around an object or a desire or a craving, right? That's what rumination is, right? We get stuck. Our mind is in an orbit around something. But gravity-free awareness allows us to have a mind that is more open, spacious. It's not stuck, right, on any one object. It's not craving, but it can observe all of that. And it's kind of like stepping back. It's kind of like having an elevated view. Imagine if you were in a helicopter just looking down and watching yourself move about your day, right? And watching your habits and watching all that you do and how you react to things. It's kind of like that. And so it allows us to change our patterns,
You know, it
right?
seems to me that there's this incessant chatter that goes on in the mind almost all the time for most of us, and we tend to identify with that. And
Oh, yeah.
what you're pointing to is a higher, broader level of consciousness, the witness self or something like that.
Yeah. So it's not buying into all of those thoughts as much, right? If you heard somebody say the thoughts that you're having in your head, if you heard somebody say some of those thoughts, you might think they were ludicrous. You might laugh at them or say, "Wait, are you kidding? You really believe that?" But when they're coming in from our own head, we tend to take them a lot more seriously. So this ability to have this ascendant, or you know, transcendent perspective or viewpoint frees us up, and so we don't have to react to those thoughts, right? Or grab onto them, and they pull us in different directions, right? If you have anxiety, for example, and you grab onto that anxiety, I call it like getting on the anxiety train. Imagine a train, right, of anxious thoughts, a train of thoughts, so to speak. And I step on that train, I might go end up in anxiety land if I go to the end of the line. But mindfulness lets us step off and get back on the platform. Even a breath in this moment can help us let go of those thoughts, take a nice breath, come back into the present moment, and then you're for just a moment, you're on the platform, right? And so mindfulness is a nice, wonderful way of just kind of letting go of that stress, of those thoughts, of grabbing on, of identifying with those, the capital I identity, right? of identifying and seeing that that's not necessarily, those thoughts aren't necessarily facts, and they don't even really define the true essence of who I am.
You know, I think it's ironic, as somebody who's also been a meditation teacher in the past, that here I am, I've made a decision, I want to meditate for 20 minutes, and I'm going to sit there, and the last thing I want to do is indulge in thinking, because that's antithetical to the open-minded mindfulness state that you're describing. But yet, thoughts come anyway. Thoughts arise. Yeah. Well, what makes them my thoughts? I didn't invite them. I don't even want them. And they come anyway.
Why do
I tend to identify with the thoughts that come to me?
That's a good point. Why do we? I mean, so many of our thoughts are just random thoughts even. There was even some research, Paul, that was interesting. It showed that a lot of that randomly people have scary, frightening, distressing thoughts. Right?
Especially now.
Yeah, especially now. And we take them seriously. And why do we need to do that? And yet,
it's because I don't have a respirator.
I think we can honor our thoughts without necessarily having to grab onto them. We can recognize, oh, this is a part of maybe my conditioned mental thinking, of some of the habits I've had. And so we don't have to reject them or see them as something bad, but to honor, oh, this is also a part of the totality of awareness.
Yeah, it's sort of one of the changing conditions of my crazy mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the ironic or paradoxical relationship between mindfulness and what you refer to as selective attention?
Well, yeah, selective attention. So that really is more about, since we do have a choice about what we want to pay attention to, we can bring our awareness to something that maybe can be a positive in our life. So gratitude is a form of selective attention. Deciding what you want to watch on TV is a form of selective attention. And if you're not selective, you can easily fall into habits of just watching things. So this idea of selective attention is also intentionality. So at some level, you're able to make a decision, and this is free will, right? And I think that's the beauty of being a human, is we have this ability, this capacity to make choices in our lives, or even to say no. We have free won't, right? We can say no to something as much as we can say yes to something. And so we can shape our lives, and it's kind of like intentionality is the steering wheel in your car, right? If you're going off-road, you need to drive back onto the road. And so we can actually shape a life. So life doesn't just happen by accident. I've had people who said to me, just by some accident, I'm living the life that I have. And I always kind of laugh at that, that if we were more intentional, it doesn't have to be an accident, right? So it's kind of like your karma occurs, or if you want to think of karma as the past, the weight or the force of the energy of things that you have done, yes, you will have a habit energy to move you in a direction, but you can alter that, right? We're not machines, and we can alter that through awareness and to say, what is really of benefit? And that's the beauty of intention, is how do I want to have a beneficial life? to reduce suffering, because we can reduce it in ourselves, we can reduce it in others, and that probably is one of the most beautiful things that we can do in life. And think about how people have been a benefactor for you, how people have made a difference in your life, and you're a benefactor, Paul, for me by allowing me to be on this show and share this message with others. So to think about the benefactors that are there for us, and then to light a candle for someone else when we can. I think that is probably one of the beauties of awakening, and that mindfulness can offer us the ability to make these kinds of choices.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, the relationship between mindfulness and decision making, we're always making decisions, whether to do something or whether to surrender, whether to lead or whether to follow, whether to try to make things happen or whether to let things happen. And the more mindful we are, the more awareness we have of that. Are there any last words that you'd like to share with us before we have to take off?
Well, I just like everybody to take care of yourselves and take care of others in your lives. That's probably paramount right now for all of us. And I just want to thank everybody for listening in.
Well, thank you, Donald, for being with us today. There's so much more that we could explore, and there's so much more in your book that we didn't even touch on, but we have run out of time. And I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website. You've got a few of them, but this is the one related to today's conversation, www.mindfulpractices.com. That's mindfulpractices.com. For those who tuned in to the Pathway Show late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of Intuitive Intelligence, a book that shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. In a second, I'll tell you how you can rewind and replay this interview whenever you want, via the internet or as a free podcast. Today we've been visiting with Donald Altman, author of Simply Mindful, a 7-week course and personal handbook for mindful living. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed via www.kboo.fm Sunday mornings at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. And thanks again to Donald Altman and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.